And welcome to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and Phil Conant is here. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
We're going to talk about, I'm going to just label this thing. We're all tailing the Pope now. The Pope is way out in front. Vanguard Pope, which is sort of unique or new experience. And not since John the 23rd, we've been chasing popes to catch up. At any rate, colonialism, neo-colonialism, and a word that is going to be in part of the vocabulary of the man we're going to interview first, David Hoyle, which is re-colonization. So today it will be David Hoyle. Listeners to the show will remember Dr. David Hoyle. He is a scholar, an authority on Sudan, and many matters to do with Africa, and he's going to talk about the International Criminal Court. And then he will be followed by Christopher Black, a Toronto lawyer who practices international law. And Christopher Black is involved in several very, very important cases. And one of his former investigators, a Rwandan, Mr. Tajiri Bambe, someone I know, by the way, I'm going to put it present tense, no, though I worry for him. And he has been taken off the streets violently by armed men in Nairobi. Not a surprising thing. And later we'll be talking about matters to do with Albert Einstein and the subject of Israel and Zionism. But right now, I think we're joined by David Hoyle. Are you there, sir?
I certainly am. How are you, Phil?
Very good, and we're very glad to be talking to you. You have a great article in the latest New African. I urge our listeners to go to that site. It's the July edition of the New African by Dr. David Hoyle, and it is about the International Criminal Court and the African Union Summit, which was held in June of this year. And, of course, there was a dramatic maybe a fake dramatic episode in which there were people, certainly in the West, who called for the arrest of one of the presidents participating in that summit, President al-Bashir. David Hoyle, you had a kind of an interesting take on this. Argue in this article that a kind of judo was played by President Zuma of South Africa and President Robert Mugabe, who have grown, I guess, rather impatient with the International Criminal Court and also with NGOs. What do you say this game was about? What happened?
Well, it's basically a watershed, really, between the European-based and European-funded and ultimately European-directed International Criminal Court and the African Union. There's been a face-off now for a number of years over the court's exclusive focus on Africa. I mean, this was a court originally brought into being to pursue injustice without fear or favor wherever it found it. And in effect, though, it's actually now been seen as a court, you know, basically to pursue Western interests in Africa, and in effect, what they've been doing really is actually destabilizing Africa in the interest of European foreign policy. Anyway, for many years, Africa has been very, very uneasy with this, obviously, and had hoped that the ICC would, in fact, show itself to be a truly universal court. And the watershed is that South Africa, for example, was one of those countries that, within Africa, there were many of them, had signed up with enthusiasm from 1998 onwards, and had actually found itself very, very disappointed. The latest African Union summit was held in South Africa, and President al-Bashir actually attended, as he always does. And at the moment he arrived, there was an attempt to get him arrested by one or two Western-funded NGOs within South Africa. The government of South Africa was actually very firm, and in as much as it said it it had already gazetted immunity for him. He was a serving head of state and therefore actually had immunity anyway, and basically defied a local court order to let him in and then out of the country as scheduled.
Yeah. They were. You also attribute a lot of the problem with understanding all this to what you call a wave of poor journalism, which you're almost being generous. the story, and I saw it here in the Toronto Star, was that they were closing in on al-Bashir, and it was going to be a close call between the police and the embarrassed government of South Africa. But that was not true at all, was it?
That's absolutely right. I was there at the time. I knew when he was coming in.
You were in attendance?
I was actually in Sandton in South Africa.
We're an actual reporter who saw this. This is Dr. David Hoyle, by the way.
It's a fascinating sort of a sideline to watch from. But he came in as scheduled, I think, on the Saturday evening, and he left as scheduled on Monday morning. And these AU summits, these African Union heads of state summits, are very short of events. They last maximum actually 2 days. And he came in as planned and left as planned. Of course, the Western media went into hyperdrive, saying he actually fled the country, he escaped, it was a narrow escape, etc. But that was actually very, very far from the truth. I mean, he was actually a plan to come in and had planned to leave at exactly the dates and times of the arrival and departure. So
he was on schedule. He just remained on schedule.
Absolutely on schedule. I mean, that was the irony about it, because you then had, of course, a whole range of incredibly poor journalists saying, well, the only reason that South Africa let him out was because South African peacekeepers who were in Darfur, in the western part of Sudan, were held hostage, until he left. It's some incredible nonsense. It's literally like, a conspiracy theories on acid.
They don't get caught in these things, do they? I mean, I know that writers such as yourself, and there are others who sort of track them and occasionally point out their errors, but they don't write to their readers, oh, by the way, we really didn't have any source for that story about Sudan threatening to take UN people hostage. correction appears.
It literally was actually one of the non-stories of the year. But what was quite interesting is that many of those journalists and politicians actually within South Africa who were, outraged at the fact that President Bashir had arrived and left without being arrested, were very much of the white South African variety. And one can't help actually feeling there's a bit of schadenfreude, on the part of a number of these South Afrikaans language newspapers that, who've actually been very, very supportive of the ICC because it was going after some black African leaders. And the
white supremacist thinking.
Yeah, in many ways, there was some more than a touch of that, I think. And the non-story, for example, about the South African members of the other peacekeeping force in Darfur being held hostage came from one or two of the Afrikaans language newspapers.
That's the source, and I get to read about that in the Toronto Star.
That was the source, and that literally was the source. And, it's hard to even work out where they came across it because it was just such poor journalism. I mean, maybe it was an attempt to rationalize why he was let out of the country or to actually divert.
By the way, didn't some other presidents actually leave before he did?
Oh, yes. I mean lots of heads of
what
state
were they fleeing?
Don't come. Lots of them don't come. Some arrive literally for 10 hours and leave. And people had left already by the sort of Monday lunchtime when Bashir left. And I think, there obviously were attempts to rationalize or to explain away the position of South Africa. But the actual watershed is that you know, in many ways, you could say that South Africa had been slightly playing both worlds. As obviously a key country within Africa, but it also had been looking towards the EU and the West, you know, and that AU summit was a very clear example of Africa all coming together, and in effect, actually led by South Africa, and South Africa had said, "Enough is enough," you know, "We want a real ICC," and they've now said that either everyone joins the ICC, or we are going to leave as a country.
I thought was a very telling line in your article in the New African, was that they're saying something, and you also cite Bishop Tutu, with a simple proposition which anybody on any street in the world would understand. Either we're all going to be treated as equal nations before the same law, or South Africa should leave that International Criminal Court.
Well, that's now, I mean, very much the feeling. And a large amount of the actual discussion, you know, in radio shows such as your own within South Africa and talk shows and on TV was exactly about this issue. I mean, the simple fact is that the ICC has had more than 9,000 cases brought to its attention with regards to alleged, you know, war crimes, the crimes against humanity, I think in over 120 countries worldwide. Of these, it has only chosen to become active in 8 African countries, and it has only indicted 36 Africans. So, you know, there's a large amount of reality in the, you know, the concerns which Africans actually have.
It is color-coded justice.
It's a racist court. I mean, if there was a court, for example, in Toronto, which, as you said, we have established ourselves into pursue very serious criminals, but we're only going to be arresting, you know, black Africans or black Canadians. That would be a racist
court. We do have some of that, yes. Yeah. That's fairly accurate.
Well, that's exactly what the ICC is doing.
I used to say here, and certainly in the U.S., that domestic policy is foreign policy. The way that immigrants are treated and dark people are treated is the way they treat foreign states.
Unfortunately, that's exactly the case. Except at this level, it's actually very much the emperor's clothes. I mean, the emperor is naked. I mean, it's a racist court. And the other fact about this court is it's not a functional court. This is one of the most dysfunctional, corrupt institutions you can ever come across. It actually calls itself a court, but just at the other day-to-day level of actually of a functionality, it's hopeless. Mm-hmm. Witness tampering, prosecutors who've actually hidden hundreds of items of exculpatory evidence actually from the court and the defense. This is not in any instance a court. And then on top of that, of course, you get this racism, which again just, you know, now is causing all sorts of difficulties for it within Africa.
Mm-hmm. This is Dr. David Hoyle. The article we're discussing is in the July edition of New African. And Dr. Hoyle is the author of two really great studies that are available on the net. One is the ICC, the International Criminal Court, Europe's Guantanamo Bay, Answer yes. And the second is Justice Denied, the Reality of the International Criminal Court. And that's published in 2014. Just go to Dr. David Hoyle, in Justice Denied, and you'll be able to read that. In that, you point out that, and in your article, that there are 5 key states that provide the money and therefore control what goes on at The Hague. And they happen to be former colonial powers. Is that right?
Well, that's one of the other issues which I think Africa is very uneasy about. Are the big 5 funders of the ICC are France, Germany, Britain, Italy, and Spain, who, of course, actually as you say, were the five big colonial powers in Africa itself. And overall, as a component of the budget, the European Union and European countries actually provide upwards of, I think it's 2/3 of the court's budget. Now, as we know, he who pays the piper calls the tune. This is one reason why, you know, no NATO soldier, no NATO politician, no white North American, no white European is ever going to appear before that court, because, you know, it's actually funded, in effect, by the European Union, and it's now it's increasingly being seen as an instrument of European foreign policy. If you don't like a particular head of state or a particular government, the ICC will be focused upon you.
Yeah, and just to you, as you say, to use the word court after you say that the five former and not so former colonial powers. I think you have a word, by the way, recolonization. If they're not going to be part of the system, as Bishop Tutu and others say, well, then it really is out of self-respect. Other states should say, I'm going to leave this phony gathering, because otherwise they're going to find themselves sitting in the dock one day or another.
Well, that's right. Not just that, but as I mentioned, actually coming before a court that, you know, is not a court that you or I would actually to recognize in a functional sense. And that makes it even worse. The reason why Africa, the African member states, haven't left, and bear in mind that African states make up at least 1/3 of the ICC's membership, one of the main reasons why they haven't left en masse is the simple fact that the European Union uses economic blackmail to keep them as members of the ICC. Every single a trade deal or aid deal signed between the European Union and African states and other third world states says that unless you cooperate with the ICC, you will not receive those funds.
So in Texas, they say if you want to get along, you better go alone.
That's right. Sudan, for example, since I think 2008 or 2007, has actually forfeit over €1 billion in that sort of assistance. Now, you know, it's a very, very difficult issue if you are a small African country to actually forgo huge amounts of that of funding. And also, of course, everything else that goes with it, because you will then find yourself actually losing out on a whole range of other things from the European Union. So, by the way, blackmail.
Yeah. Now, apropos of that, they also have, in order to make sure that the Africans behave and meet standards set in Europe, which are, of course, really no standards at all when you look into it, but they have organizations such as one you mentioned in your article, the Southern African Litigation Center, I think it is.
That's right.
And which, if I read your article right there, some of the African delegates refer to that as a coconut NGO because it's brown on the outside and white on the inside. But these organizations, they have this lovely title, NGO, and they always put / human rights and protection of somebody. But they are Western-funded. Am I right about that? And the personnel and whatnot are selected in Western capitals.
Absolutely right. I mean, usually usually in the week or two or lead up to these meetings of the African Union heads of state, there'll always be a round robin letter, usually arranged by Human Rights Watch, which will list, you know, anywhere between 80 and 120 so-called African civil society organizations saying how much they love the ICC. Mm-hmm. These countries actually have to work with the ICC. The actual reality is that if you look at them, as we have done, as I have done over the years, at least 90 to 95% of them are groups that actually receive their funding either bilaterally or multilaterally from Europe, by way of the European Union or individual European states, or or big foundations like the Ford Foundation, etc., out of Washington and New York.
Ford, Ford means equality for sure. so they, someone like an organization like Salk, I guess they call themselves, they can. And a meeting is called of presidents of Africa, and they take their little whistle and blow it, and they expect the South African government to arrest a head of state.
That's exactly right. That is exactly what happened.
And if they don't, Afrikaners are going to be disappointed.
I think. I mean, literally, there is a Schadenfreude aspect, certainly within South Africa. And I listened to a lot of the conversations actually whilst I was there, you know, on air and off air. And you know, I just hate to say it, but there is that element, certainly in South Africa, of that sort of latent racism about, well, you know, the ICC is a good thing because it's going to actually sort out a black African leader. Many of him also, of course, many of the targets that these guys would like the ICC to be focused on are people who were involved in the liberation struggle, you know, like Mugabe. There's nothing these guys would like more than have the ICC focused on Mugabe of Zimbabwe. So,
indeed.
Yes, it's there. It's there. The racism is there.
Yes. Well, David Hoyle, there is an excellent article in the New African July issue, and of course, the great your pamphlets. I'm going to call them pamphlets. The International Criminal Court, Europe's Guantanamo Bay. And Justice Denied, The Reality of the International Criminal Court. I think, by the way, that's a particularly timely piece. I really hope people go on the net and find it. We really appreciate it, David. It's very informative. Thank you.
Not at all. It's a pleasure.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Cheers.
David Hoyle. And you're listening to the Taylor Report. Write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM. And we're on the net, Taylor-Report.com. Last week I mentioned... we had Fred Jerome on, and by the way, we might play. I've done a second interview, and we're going to be playing that. I don't know if we get it in today, but I want you to know that his book, Einstein on Israel and Zionism, is quite difficult to get. But if you go to the site of the AMEU, .com, you will at that site you can find they have. Copies of the book, Israel and Zionism, available. So please avail yourself of the chance to have that book. Do I have to tell you that Einstein's brilliant? I guess not. This is, as I say, the Taylor Report at CIUT 89.5 FM. We hope to be speaking shortly with Chris Black. On July 26th, by the way, at... the Cecil Street, United Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street. There will be, at from 2 to 6 p.m., there's going to be a music and speeches about, of course, Veinte Seis de Julio, the July 26th, the beginning of the rebellion, successfully led by a rather eminent individual from our hemisphere, Fidel Castro. That's going to be, and that's the Toronto Forum on Cuba.com is sponsoring that. August 6th, by the way, there's going to be the commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and that is going to be Thursday, August the 6th, at Church of Holy Trinity, the west side of the Eaton Center, from 4:30 through the evening. And that is a very important one to know about as well.